present the News Quiz with your host, Lucy Porter.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an announcement heard at Manchester Airport last weekend, read by Corrie Caulfield.
We apologise for the long delay at passport control. This is due to several aeroplanes arriving on schedule at the correct time.
Our thanks to Jane Maloney for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Hugo Rifkind and stand-up comedian Eleanor Tiernan. And opposite them on my left, stand-up comedian Rhys James and Katie Brand. Hugo, whose deal is starting to lack confidence?
So this is about the difficult relationship between the Conservative government and the Democratic Unionist Party, which seemed at the time like, you know, this could be a match made in heaven because they're on the right and Conservatives are on the right and they wanted Brexit and Conservatives wanted Brexit. And for a mere £1 billion of taxpayers' money demanded with menaces, the DUP were convinced to enter into a supply and confidence arrangement with the government in order to support their policies throughout the duration of government. Only now they're not going to. Now they've said, you know what, we're going to vote down the next budget because we're unhappy with what's happening in Brexit. Now, what they're unhappy about is a little complicated, but it's basically, if you're going to leave the EU and not be in a customs union with the EU, then you inevitably need a customs border either between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland or between the UK and all of Ireland. And the DUP is against both of these things. They're also against not doing Brexit and calling the whole thing off, which is sort of a problem. It's a bit like if you're in a taxi and you come to a T-junction and the driver goes, do you want to go left? And you go, no. And the driver goes, do you want to go right? And you go, no. And the driver goes, shall we just stay here then? And you go, no. And the driver goes, so look, what are we supposed to do? And you say, well, actually, my cunning plan is that a magic unicorn is going to arrive and take us all to some distant magic land which doesn't exist yet and everything's going to be fine. And in the absence of Theresa May offering this, unreasonably, the DUP are basically saying, look, do what we want or we're going to force an election and we'll take our chances with Jeremy Corbyn. And what Theresa May ought to be saying to that is, what, you mean the Jeremy Corbyn who's mates with Jerry Adams? You know, the Jeremy Corbyn whose shadow chancellor is going to be John McDonnell, who literally praised the bombs and bullets of the IRA. You're going to take a chance with that Jeremy Corbyn and see if that's better for Ulster unionism. But they're not saying that. They're just saying no. And so for Theresa May, increasingly, the only option is the Canada option, which isn't any sort of deal. It just means her moving there by herself. And living in an igloo, perhaps forever.
Poor Theresa May. She, you know when they say there's always someone worse off than you? I think increasingly that is, they mean Theresa May, don't they? If ever I feel bad about having spent money on something, I think, well, at least I didn't spend £1 billion on the DUP, you know?
The thing is, the irony is they keep saying we have to be in regulatory alignment with the rest of the UK, except apparently when it comes to single-sex marriage, abortion rights for women. Apparently that's all fine, then. Yeah. We'll do our own thing on that.
Also, dog licences.
Oh, really?
Yes, you need a dog
licence. Really hard line on dog licence.
You need a dog licence in Northern Ireland and only in Northern Ireland. It's an outrage.
That was a great quote I read. I don't know if it came from Arlene Foster herself, but it was from the DUP, I think, about all of this and about the red lines, which was the most hard-line thing I've heard from anyone in Brexit, which was, this is a game of who blinks first and we cut off our eyelids. It's a Theresa May just doing that weird bow she does when she's with a member of the royal family, just backing out of the room, like, just a limb at a time.
Everyone else has been talking about red lines, but Arlene Foster talked about blood red lines.
Yeah.
They're so dramatic. It's like, I bet they don't have a black coffee. It's like, coffee as black as a raven's grief. They are extraordinary. Eleanor, I don't want to lump the whole of Ireland in together.
But I wish I had something, some solution for you guys, but no, it's a pile of dung, isn't it? It's very hard from the perspective of somebody from the Republic to understand Brexit because we're so into the EU in Ireland. We love them. Like, we've got teenagers have posters of Michel Barnier on their wall in Ireland. They have an 88% approval rating in Ireland, the EU. It's actually too high. We've been asked to tone it down a bit. They said, seriously, have a little bit of self-respect, Ireland, will you? We're like, whatever you want, whatever you like, but have you thought about what you want for Christmas? Go on, go on. It's just tricky. We're holding on with bated breath to see what you guys do. And, we'd be delighted if you'd just stick to one position. Yeah.
No, I don't understand any of it. I really don't get it. I don't get this hard border stuff. I thought a hard border is just what you got if you snuck a nuts magazine into Eton.
And what good news from the Supreme Court might the DUP have been happy with this week?
Oh, this is the gay cake. Yes, cakes aren't allowed to be gay anymore. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I mean, no. I thought all cakes were gay.
Well, yeah, most of them. So there were bakers in Northern Ireland, and they were asked to create a cake that was celebrating equal marriage in some sort of way, and they said no, and it went to court about whether or not you have the right as a baker to refuse to make a cake celebrating equal marriage, and it turns out you do.
Yeah, so, yeah. And it were Asher's Bakery, and I think it had Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street on it.
And it looked nice. Yeah. It's a shame that it didn't get eaten.
Did you say you've seen the cake?
I saw a picture of the cake. But I haven't been in the same room as the cake.
But if they didn't make the cake, you can't have seen the cake.
Yeah, maybe it was an artist's impression of the cake, but it did look like a nice cake. Look, I'll even eat a picture of a cake.
I'll just get a cake.
It's because they didn't want to support the message. But since when does making a cake of a thing mean you support that thing? Like an M&S in favour of massive caterpillars.
This is the DUP have threatened that they may vote against the upcoming budget in spite of having a supply and confidence deal with the Conservatives as a protest against Theresa May's Brexit plans. Downing Street has insisted that a defeat on the budget wouldn't amount to a vote of no confidence, much like it insisted that May losing her majority last year wasn't really a defeat, and the ongoing chip pan fire in the kitchen will be fine if they just leave it to burn itself out. According to the DUP, it is vital that Northern Ireland is treated exactly the same as the rest of the UK, with the exception of curtailing basic rights for gay people and women, which it's allowed to do because it got a special note from Jesus. 2 points to Hugo. Eleanor, who's trying to create a climate of change?
This story is from a report that came out this week, and it's on a thing called climate change. Do we know what this climate change thing is? It's a new thing that they're bringing out, basically, we thought we had a lot more time to fix the planet than we actually do. We thought it was going to be, by 2030, that the global temperature would have risen 1.5 degrees, but it turns out it's going to have risen to 3 degrees. And I think if scientists expect us to take this 3 degrees seriously, they need to stop choosing threats that are named after 1960s pop bands. They're telling us we need to act now before we will stop this global catastrophe. But I think if we needed to take this serious, I think the politicians would be on it. And I don't see them doing anything about it, so I'm not. I went on the UK government website to see what directions they had for, you know, citizens, what can we do to stop climate change. There's nothing there, so obviously it doesn't matter. There was one thing that I saw there where they said there's quite an extensive section on how to apply for a fishing rod licence. So I decided I would apply for that. I think maybe that's what they mean. Maybe they're telling us, you know, that the water levels are going to rise. So, you know, get your fishing rod licence now, you know, because that's how we're going to feed ourselves. I don't know. I think there's more concerning items on the news agenda. I saw some stuff about Strictly Come Dancing this week. And that deserves a public information campaign for sure. Like, these people, they were supposed to be only pretending to be attracted to each other, and it turns out that they actually were. I feel very deceived by that. I think that deserves more of an information campaign than this climate change crap.
It's nice to have a panellist whose views chime so completely with Donald Trump's. It's quite unusual. I mean, it's
a diversity thing. I'm trying to get the angle in.
Yes.
I'm relieved you're here because it's the BBC, so it's like illegal to have a panel discussion on climate change that doesn't include one person who completely denies it utterly. Right. Perhaps while literally smoking a burning tyre. So, so well done you.
Thanks,
Well, look, all we need to do, I was reading about this, all we need to do for everything to be fine is stop eating meat, rebuild all of our houses, fundamentally overhaul our economy, and invent lots of new technologies that are going to make everything okay. And I reckon we can manage that.
I mean, is there anything we can do to help? What do you think?
I agree with Eleanor a bit. I think that given that it's meant to be an international emergency, no one seems that asked. Like, it is like, it's an emergency. What should we do? Oh, maybe just don't have a straw with your Frappuccino. Is that it? Think it should be a level of an emergency like the Second World War. We should all be given electric cars like Anderson shelters. We're so used to the responsibility for everything being thrown onto the individual and the individual consumer. It's like the government is now addicted to that, and something that is a genuine international global emergency. There's no joke at the end of this, by the way. It's like, surely there should be more. There should be a massive emergency package that we're all forced to abide by. Sorry, that sounds a bit fascist. But is it an emergency or not? That's essentially what I'm asking.
Well, the problem is, if it is an emergency, it is to, you know, what can you do? You can install solar panels, you can give up meat, or you can just form a violent mob to overthrow the international fossil fuels lobby and then march around wearing Michael Gove's skin as a suit.
That's the problem, isn't it? Because Michael Gove is the environment secretary, and he looks like he's never been outside. But the thing is, climate change deniers, but they're just people who don't want to accept responsibility, but they've got nothing to go on. Like, in, like, 20 years, the planet will be ruined, and they'll be there going, oh, look, the world's destroying itself. It must be a Banksy.
I just think we need to be told what to do, like, from tomorrow.
Basically, do I need a pension or not?
Yes, this is the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who this week released a landmark report warning that we have only 12 years to keep global warming below 1.5 degrees or face environmental catastrophe. At the current rate, we could reach 1.5 degrees of warming by 2030, and that's without factoring in the carbon dioxide released when Donald Trump leaves office and starts burning all the paperwork. If we do nothing and global temperatures increase, hundreds of millions could face catastrophe and infrastructures could collapse. But on the bright side, Loughborough has everything it takes to make for a beautiful seaside town. If you have a child now, they will probably never see a polar bear. And if your child is 15 now, they will probably never see a polar bear. You yourself will probably never see a polar bear. Nothing to do with climate change, they're just very elusive. 2 points to Eleanor. Katie, who's warned that the government might be universally discredited?
Right, well, this is the story that seems to be kicking off this week about universal credit. They've been kind of gradually rolling this out, this thing that everyone agrees is a good idea, but no one can figure out how to make it work. And now, finally, John Major has kicked off in that John Major-y way. He's got quite feisty since he stopped being the Prime Minister, hasn't he? I quite fancy him now. But anyway, John Major has kicked off about universal credit, which is this system of bringing all the existing benefits together into one monthly payment. And it's very, very, very complicated, it seems. And it's all supposed to start for everyone, I think, next spring. Mm-hmm. And there just doesn't seem to be a sense that anybody is ready for this. And there's going to be riots, some people are predicting, and people are just going to be in a really bad way. So it just sounds very, very complicated. I can't imagine how it's all going to work. They have to bring together all these things. They have to monitor when people's income go up or down. Like, I can't even work an Excel spreadsheet. I literally put all the numbers into all the cells, and then I add them up on a calculator. And then I write the figure in the bottom cell and I just pretend I've done it all with the magic things. So to me, this just seems mind-blowingly complicated. So, yeah.
Well, even John Major, as you said, he told the BBC, I think we need to look carefully at how universal credit is introduced and when it is introduced and what the circumstances are and the resources that are available to assist its introduction. Yet another electrifying reminder of the sort of thrilling rhetoric that made John Major the Muhammad Ali of early 90s politics. Hugo, do you think, is it well-intentioned in principle, universal credit?
It's sort of well-intentioned, because the idea behind it is, look, you've got to make work pay, right? You've got to make it so that people are better off rather than worse off if they're in work. But you'd think the obvious way to do that is make them earn more if they're in work, mm-hmm. not make them have less if they're not in work. And that's kind of the way around it's working. I think when you've got John Major saying, hang on, this might get a bit hairy, to a Conservative government, you've got to sort of sit up and take notice of that, yeah.
They said, "What, to Theresa May, what do you need to make this work, universal credit?" And she said, money.
They'd be better off just spending the money they have got, entering the whole country in the postcode lottery.
it does sound like such a nice thing. The name is wonderful. Universal credit. You know, they should get rid of the system and just keep the name and make it about, you know, giving people rewards for doing good deeds, like universal credit. You know, like you helped an old lady across the road. Here's a tenner. You know?
This week, former Prime Minister Sir John Major warned that the way the government is rolling out universal credit could prove as hated with the public as Margaret Thatcher's poll tax. The poll tax could have brought down the sitting Conservative government were it not for the huge unpopularity of the then Labour leader. For any déjà vu fans out there, we just need Jeremy Corbyn to fall into the sea and we've got a full house. Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell has confirmed that Labour would scrap universal credit and replace it with a weekly visit from Jeremy's jam bus. A converted open-top double-decker fitted with a high-powered jam hose. Get your burlap sacks ready, the jam's about to fire out! 2 points to Katie. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Eleanor have 4 and Reese and Katie have 5. We start round two with a news story from Prague seen on the BBC website.
A highly venomous green mamba snake escaped from its owner on Tuesday after biting her in the Czech capital.
Thanks to Timo in Wendover for sending us that. Reese, who's calling last orders on booze?
Young people are. Thank you for asking. This is the story that young people, it turns out, aren't drinking alcohol, really, anymore. And I understand that you've obviously asked me as the representative of youth on this panel, but this data is about 16 to 25-year-olds, and I am 27, and thus an alcoholic. I actually sort of agree with the data. As a young person, I don't drink that much. I consider myself a social drinker. I only drink at parties, by which I mean I've never had a drink in my life. So basically 30% or something of 16 to 25-year-olds don't drink, right? But then there's all this speculation on why are young people drinking less, and everyone's getting involved and saying, oh, it's because they're spending their money on drugs, which is more cost-effective, let me tell you. Or they're saying, oh, it's because they're saving up for a house. Right, do you know how bad the housing situation is for young people? They're not going to solve it by just not buying a Carlsberg. Right? The only way that my generation will be able to get a house is if their parents die. Right, and the quickest way for that to happen is to just let them have all the alcohol. That is there's a lot deeper than you think. There's stuff to do now as well, that's the thing. That's why this generation don't need booze, because now we've got Netflix. The previous generations had to talk to each other. No wonder they got pissed all the time. You don't want to be sober if your main method of entertainment is hitting a hula hoop with a stick. I've done zero research into the past.
You're spot on, actually.
Yeah,
you are
exactly.
Spot on. I'm glad you have backed up the statistics there, which is quite... I mean, anecdotally, I could back them up as well. I think young people are less keen. My 8-year-old can't stand the stuff.
I'm quite worried about this phenomenon. I think maybe, you know, human beings, we have depended on alcohol for centuries to get us through tough times. Bad relationships, bad exam results, good exam results, you know, those kind of situations. And I'm worried that, you know, alcohol will turn its back on us if we don't keep availing of it. So I think young people are playing a dangerous game, you know, and I do have to come clean, actually. I don't drink. I am one of those people. I'm not in the age category, but I had to stop. It was time. It was time. I got a letter from L'Oreal telling me I wasn't worth it anymore.
I mean, it was, for me, you know, drinking definitely at that age, it was a huge... I mean, now you've got your trendy alternatives like self-confidence.
I completely agree with this theory that we drank because we didn't have anything else to do. I mean, when you were a kid, you drank because the alternative was, like, solvents or headbutting a wall until you got dizzy, which both of which I did quite a lot in bus shelters. Whereas now, well, you know, I was thinking, now why don't young people drink? And I thought, well, they're never bored now. They're always busy. There's always something to do. They're always on social media, reading social media. Then I thought, no, that doesn't work because that's why I drink. So I don't know. It's just a kind of sort of social change that I might understand if I was sober.
When people say they don't drink, like young people, I'm like, just wait till you have kids. After our kids have gone to bed, our living room is like Hogarth's Gin Lane. But I think it does sort of come and go in your life, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you still... Oh, that's sweet that you're still pretending you don't drink until the kids have gone to bed.
Yeah, the kids go to bed at noon. I mean, you know, but... yes, this is the news that almost a third of 18 to 24-year-olds in the UK do not drink alcohol at all. This might be due to cost, health concerns, or the fact that we've made the world so weird that they all just think they're hammered already. Young people's lives are very different now. For example, these days, TV is actually good. Back in the old days, you needed at least half a bottle of Rioja to get through a peak practice. The trend is set to continue after Brexit, when the only alcohol we'll be able to drink is a weak turnip wine made by Jeremy Corbyn. That's 2 points to Rhys. Hugo, who's telling her fans not to shake it off when it comes to the midterms?
Oh, OK. Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, the popular singing artist, told her 112 million Instagram followers in the US midterm elections to vote based on who most closely represents your values. And everyone agreed immediately that this meant that she was a Democrat, although I'd suggest that the values of an 11-year-old girl who obsessively stalks Taylor Swift on Instagram might not be that different from the current Republican president. But she went on, anyway, to specifically endorse the Democratic candidate in Tennessee, criticising the Republican incumbent. And 102,000 new voters had registered in the next 48 hours, they reckon, entirely because of this. And so the Democrat candidate, he was delighted. Meanwhile, the far right in America are very upset because they always liked Taylor Swift because they thought she looked like a Nazi. And just reporting. And also Donald Trump was a bit upset. Someone asked him if he minded, and he said, "I like her music 25% less now."
Can I just say, Hugo, when you called her a popular singing artist,
yes,
that is the youngest I've ever felt in my life.
What's your favourite Taylor Swift album?
Album, 1989.
Look at that.
You don't know if that's the one or not, do you? So, I could have said any word then, and I'd have got away with it. Obviously, people would have written in, but...
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah. I just think it's not a great return, is it? She got 112 million followers and 100,000 people signed up to vote. That's, like, less than half.
In US politics this week, voter registration in the states experienced an unexpected surge after Taylor Swift threw her political weight behind two Democrat nominees for Tennessee in the midterms. Some older listeners may not know who Taylor Swift is, so to put it in context, some of you might remember the furore ahead of the 1974 general election when Suzy Quatro endorsed Harold Wilson and Jackie. Many celebrities do have a lot of political pull. I voted for Paddy Ashdown in 92 after Jeanette Cranky told me to do it in a dream. 2 points to Hugo. Eleanor, who can't hide from their mistake?
Is this a story that was in the bank? A very good citizen in Birmingham was walking past a local branch of NatWest, and because all these banks now have glass fronts, spotted in the window an employee of the bank cowering underneath their desk. So they did what you're told to do, see it, say it, sorted. They called up the police. Police arrived at the bank to foil what they thought was going to be a robbery. Turns out it was a team building exercise that the bank were going through. It was a game of hide and seek that was being... played, and I don't know, it raises a whole load of questions for me, that particular incident. How does playing hide and seek help you do your job in a bank better? How seriously were the bank employees taking the game of hide and seek that the member of the public couldn't tell from their face that it was just a game? They were all really, really into it.
You're right, because it said that they were cowering. The member of the public saw them cowering under their... You know, why were they... If it's just a game of hide and seek, you know, what was the punishment for losing 40 lashes with a paying in book, presumably?
They asked, what have you learned from this whole situation? And I think they've said... We need to find better hiding places. Someone just walking by can see you, then you're not bringing your A game, frankly.
Imagine how much that branch manager must have been so scared, right, when someone said to him, let's play hide and seek. And he went, OK, I'll shut my eyes and count to 100. Next thing he hears is sirens. He must have thought, how did I fall for that? That is the oldest trick in the book.
I just wondered if this is what's going on when it takes 45 minutes to get through to online banking, you know. Telephone.
A good team-building exercise would be how to learn how to accept accountability for causing a global financial crash.
Armed police attended what they thought was a bank raid in Birmingham this week, only to discover that the staff were hiding under their desks due to a team-building game of hide-and-seek. Chief Inspector Dave Keane tweeted to say that phoning the police had been the right call, adding that he loves getting to drive fast with the knee-nails on. And thoughts and prayers go to the family of Jennifer, whose perfect hiding spot in the airtight vault was not discovered until after the long weekend. When the police realised their mistake, they apologised to the startled workers before moving on to tear gas a game of British Bulldog in a Holland and Barrett. 2 points to Eleanor. And before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share? Eleanor.
Richard Andrews saw this misprint on a local buy and sell Facebook page in Havant. Virtually new black and white bed frame for sale. Can sell with mistress if required.
Rhys.
David Pitcher found this in the Kimpton Parish magazine, Hertfordshire, in an article about the Memorial Hall. Lastly, we must offer our thanks in this regard to John Marsh, whose tireless work with the Hertfordshire Naturists has resulted in agreement that we will hold their balls for the next several years.
Katie!
This is from Azerbaijan's Azer News and was spotted by Charlie Jacoby in Somerset. It says, last season, about 450 licences were granted for hunting rabbits, 860 for water birds, and others for hunting wild boars. In addition, 240 licences were granted for foreign tourists.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Eleanor have 9, and Rhys and Katie have 9! Before we leave you, here is something seen on a menu in a London restaurant sent in by Ian Reid.
If you'd like a straw, please ask one of your waiters. They are biodegradable.
And with that, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz with Hugo Rifkin, Eleanor Tiernan, Rhys James and Katie Brown. And the chair was Lucy Porter. And the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Benjamin Partridge and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Heidi Regan and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.